I was verifying that the link from last week did not work to get to this week's.
For YouTube?
Yeah, it takes us
back. Yeah, it might work eventually. No. I have to re-add that block. I realized real fast as I was talking why I wasn't broadcasting to YouTube, and it's because I accidentally deleted the block out of the session. So that's why we're not on YouTube right now. But
I don't think it's going to work anywhere. I think YouTube gives you a different link for his posture. Yeah. Because that was actually playing last week's.
But we are live on IACast Radio. So we're in one place or another.
There we go.
But the surefire way to get the show is to subscribe to the podcast and download it.
There you go.
See, I'm a professional almost.
Yeah, subscribe. You'll get the show as soon as it's released. And if you are a supporter of ours, you will get the show usually about 24 hours before everybody else does.
Yeah,
in addition to any, yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
In addition to any bonus content that we record, because the bonus content does not go out to the public at large. So technically working.show will get you right to the page that you need to be to. And there you can hit the support this show link, and that will take you to our current means of you providing financial support, which is the
Pinecast tip jar.
Yes. There we go. Yeah. I knew as I was thinking of it, and I was like, Mike's going to jump in real quick. No, Mike hadn't jumped in yet. Oh, okay. There we go at the same time. Look, yep. We're professional. Pinecast we planned it that way.
but I do now remember what we were talking about before we went live. So it is almost professional. We were talking about dynamic ad insertion.
So dynamic ad insertion for me is sort of like government regulating technology, which I mean to say is not a terrible idea within itself, but the execution I have seen on both ends of those things is not great. We're going to skip the whole political conversation and government regulating tech and get right to the dynamic ad insertion. So for those not familiar with the idea, and I'm pretty sure you probably have heard a podcast at this point, but you're just not familiar with the terminology. Dynamic ad insertion is when a podcast is uploaded. So let's take Technically Working, for example. If we were to do this, which we're never going to do it because I won't allow it, I'll quit the show. Mark, I have to find another co-host. I'm putting that out there right now. But if for some reason I were to agree to do this, we would upload our show. Once the show was uploaded, everything would be, you know, as it is. Mike would do the edit and show would go up. And now the show is live. You subscribing to your podcast app would open up your podcast app on Mondays and you would get the new show. As you were downloading this show, however, the MP3 that Mike gave, the company
podcast host. Yep.
Yep. They would insert at random spots in the MP3 an ad. And one benefit to dynamic ad insertion in a way is that you could get local ads. So instead of you hearing about a thing that you don't care about, such as Squarespace, you could hear about, you know, I don't know, maybe a insurance company that's local to your region that has great rates, or, you know, the new, you know, duplex apartments that are going up in your area, anything that's local. And that's one benefit to it is that you can target people regionally for the ads that are on the fly inserted in the episode. And there's a lot of technical background to how they do this, but essentially MP3s are very forgiving of you breaking them up and adding stuff. So that's how that basically works. Consider if Mike was to send me an MP3 and I was like, oh, well, right here, I'm going to chop out and move this, nudge this second part after my split forward a little bit, and then just insert a little bit of my conversation. That's what they're doing, but it's very easy to do. You don't have to actually, nobody's sitting there opening up Reaper or something and inserting these ads. It just happens on the fly. Like, oh, at point whatever, we're going to insert this ad. Which again, as I said, on the surface of it, is not a bad idea. Because if we're able to get ads, and I actually think the barrier to get dynamic ad insertion is much lower than it is to sometimes have conversations with advertisers, such as a Squarespace. However, my experience, at least, is very poorly done. Even in the instances, because I know somebody's listening that's like very much on up on dynamic ad insertion and how it works. the companies that are trying at least to do it better will have tones that are supposed to be, and you won't ever hear these tones. Like they're way above human frequency range. But basically you're inserting a marker in the file where, hey, it's okay to insert an ad here. I also think you have to be kind of big in order to get with those companies too. Cause I've heard such conversations had around Twit, for example, the Twit podcast network, for example. But most dynamic ad insertions, they interrupt sentences. So I could be in the middle of saying, oh, the great car insurance company, blah, 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 that sometimes they insert ads in the middle of sentences in dynamic ad insertion. That's how that goes. That is one of the reasons I'm vehemently opposed to it. And as close as me and Mike are, and as good as friends as I think me and Mike are, I would walk if he was really serious. Like, man, we got to do it, though. Like, no. I'm moving us to this platform so we can do it. No, he's not doing any of this. None of this is happening in the background. It's
no, me. No.
You know, but.
Because I hate them, too. It's not just Tomasi. They're horrible sometimes.
Yeah. And the reason is because of the poor execution. They interrupt at very random times. Nonsensical times in the episode. Now, again, those, and I haven't had any experience using or configuring or helping to set up those type of instances where you insert a tone here where you want that ad spot to go. Because then you as the podcast host can give a clean break of subject matter to say, okay, here's an ad. And then you insert the tone and then they drop in the ad dynamically right there based off of that insertion. That would be great if it actually worked that way. I have not, again, I don't have any experience with any of those. To my knowledge, and I don't follow this space very closely because I don't want to do it, is at least my perception of it is that you have to be on the larger side to get one of those deals. Whereas we could very easily get a crappy dynamic ad inserted company to work with us. The other downside to dynamically inserted ads, though, and we don't do these all the time. I don't think we're doing them right now, but chapters.
Nope, we are not doing those.
It breaks your chapter markers if you're doing dynamic ad insertion, because chapter markers are based off time. So if Mike inserts a chapter mark, if we were doing chapter marks, at let's say 15 minutes and 35 seconds. Well, if you're a subscriber, you support us financially, your chapter markers would be great. Mm-hmm. If we were doing dynamic ad insertion and you weren't a supporter, then that 15 minute, 35 second chapter marker would be moved whenever they insert an ad at 13 minutes and 20 seconds. Now, they could fix this, like, and this is why I say they're crappy, and it's why I refuse to do them at all, because it's actually not a bad idea, and it's not actually, the idea is great. The execution is poor, and the poor execution is why I won't do it, because it's not very difficult. Chapter markers are sent in the, and this is going to get a little technical, but we'll move on really quickly. Chapter markers are embedded in the metadata of the file, which are sent in the headers of your MP3. It's very easy to look, and you could write code that would look to see, oh, there's chapter markers here. So if we insert if there's a chapter marker at 1535 in the file, and we're going to insert an ad at 1320, well, we could move that chapter marker by, 2 minutes and 15 seconds forward, so that it's now at 17 minutes and 60 seconds, 18 minutes, right? Do a little math, which computers are actually pretty good at doing math. To move that marker so that you don't break people's chapters.
Now, what about dynamically pre-rolls or dynamic post-ads? What are your opinions on that?
So, again, the idea is great. One of the reasons I'm opposed, and I think I would always be opposed to a show that I am a primary host on doing any sort of dynamic ad insertion of any sort, is because I grew up, sounds weird to say that, but I grew up with podcasters who did host read ads.
Mm.
And what I love about host read ads over any kind of dynamic insertion is that means I approved what ad is getting played on our show. A dynamically ad insert. Now, there could be situations, but in general, I expect that dynamically inserted ads are, I don't have any control over those ads. I may be able to give you a category of the type of ads, but it's kind of like YouTube ads to me. I can't say, don't ever, for the love of God, don't ever show a Squarespace ad on my YouTube video. I don't think I'm able to do that. with YouTube, unless you're like, you know, MKBHD or somebody. You might have that kind of pull. But for us little people who manage to get a channel big enough that we can actually get ads on them, you don't have the ability to tell YouTube what not to play. I do believe that you have to the ability to cover categories of ads, for example. But you don't have the ability to say never show this type of ad. The other thing is, and the thing that bothers me about that is that I feel like as a podcast host or as a individual, whether it's in my role as a podcast host, a consultant, or even just a friend to somebody, if I recommend something, it's because I believe that thing is good. If that turns out not to be true and we find out later that thing is not good, I am at least willing to admit that, hey, I made a mistake. But if you're inserting a pre-roll ad on my show for X number, you know, X car insurance company or Y mechanic shop, I don't know nothing about them people. And I feel like if you go to that insurance company or that mechanic or that restaurant based off hearing it on my show and you have a bad experience, I'm still going to have to deal with the feedback at technicallyworking.show for that experience. But I had nothing to do with that experience. Now, if I sit and do an ad for AT Guys or Stripe or think of another company I would like to do an ad for, I don't know, somebody that pays big money, not Squarespace.
Microsoft. They pay big money.
You know, and the reason I say not Squarespace is because of their accessibility issues, right? Like at some point, I do believe our show will have enough of a listening audience that we can have a conversation with Squarespace. And our target audience would be interested in a platform such as Squarespace. I won't do a Squarespace ad until they fix their accessibility.
But you might do a Generate Press ad.
I might do a Generate Press ad. I might do a Shopify ad. Just won't do a Squarespace ad.
Yeah.
But that's the difference, right? I can ensure, we can ensure, because I say I'm not the, you know, dominant ruler of the show. It's just this is a cooperation. But neither one of us would want to do an ad for something that doesn't work just because they're paying us.
Nope.
Because I feel like we are steering you or pointing you. And again, even if we were doing ads, like, it's only our responsibility as a podcast host to point you at a company that we think may be good for what you're looking for. And if it sounds interesting, go there. Please use our code if you choose to buy anything or use our special link so they know that their, you know, advertising is actually working. However, it's up to the company to sell the product to you once you get there. That has always been my feeling about podcast ads. And the reason I like HostRed ads is because, again, typically you're not going to read an ad for something you don't believe in or you don't use. Anything we've ever recommended on this show, and I mean recommendations because we haven't got paid to do anything, has been because of our experience with this tool or that service or that app. And whether we're using it today, you know, we may have outgrown it or don't have any use for it anymore, but our experience is still great with it. Michael mentions GeneratePress. Great WordPress theme. I will always hold GeneratePress to, you know, one of my first options when it comes to building a WordPress site, simply because it is a great tool and their support is very responsive. I would also recommend buying the GP Premium add-on that gives you a whole lot of extra features that can minimize or even in some cases negate the need to, you know, write custom code or create your own custom template files or even use a child theme in a lot of cases. I would also suggest that if you're going to buy the GP Premium theme, use our affiliate link because it helps us out. But we both use that theme. Mike's built sites with it. Mike is probably building a site right now that uses
it. I'm building three, I think, right now that are using it.
Well, I would imagine in a few more months, I'll be back to building sites to use GeneratePress. So it's something that we actively use. And even if I, you know, moved on to like, well, I'm, you know, building my thing from scratch, starting with the WordPress underscores theme, I would still say GeneratePress is great, even though I may personally not use it anymore for reasons of customization and not, you know, starting from where I want to start from. Still a great thing. You know, so that's that. But that is my issue overall with dynamically inserted ads of any sort, because number one, the inserts in the middle of shows tend to be very poor. The pre-roll and post-roll ads, like I said, it more comes down to I prefer to advertise for things that I can personally verify are good things for you to go after. I don't want to steer you in a direction because you heard about something on the show that neither one of us has never used because you're talking about something local to you. Again, the idea behind it is great. And I think for certain types of shows, it even makes more sense. But I don't think that's our show.
So my ad for today is... Digital Bites, a new show we're doing with Unmute on Sundays. And this is going to turn into a hardware ad because it's a show where we come and share, we being Marty, Chris, and myself, come and share with you a tip. That'd be a tip using your mobile phone. This week, for example, Marty's showing you how to move an app on iOS. A couple weeks ago, Chris showed you how to move an app on Android. And then Chris is doing a hardware... Nope, she's talking about a crossword puzzle on Sundays, the Apple News crossword puzzle. Did you know that one of the app developers, I forget who it is now, created a crossword puzzle that is fairly accessible? We talked about it last week. And I'm talking about these new Tribbett Quiet Plus headsets, which are actually a lot more comfortable than I thought they were going to be. And I think that was your first comment, too, was that they were more comfortable. And for the price, they're pretty nice. I like them.
So you can check out these Tribbett Quiet. What are they called again? Because I don't have the model.
Tribbett Quiet Plus over-the-ear headphones. I think that's
you can get that those name. At yes. atguys.com. And they are amazing headphones. I've used them to do a podcast or bike before. The beautiful thing about those headphones, just to extend that ad a little bit more, invoices in
the Tribbett X3 Go over-the-ear Bluetooth headphones.
There we go. I probably should go fix the title of those on the website at atguys.com. But you can get those, and a link will be in the show notes for those. But those are really actually comfortable headphones. They are a successor to what we used to sell at AT Guys, the Tribbett Quiet Comfort Plus headphones is what they were called, the previous version. These are a lower cost version, but they're not cheaper.
Right.
If that makes sense, which doesn't make sense to me, but they are cheaper, but they're not cheap in the sense of like they feel great. Like in a lot of ways, there are improvements upon the original version that we carried. They still offer the same features, which includes Bluetooth as well as a hardwired option, cable included in the box. So we don't even make you go buy a new cable like Apple does with their, the Maxes. There you go. The AirPod Max. Those things. Yeah, we don't even make you go buy extra cable. They're in the box. They do connect over Bluetooth. You have the option for wired, which is how I have used them to do a podcast. The microphone on these is actually really good. Uh-huh. Like you should get those. Oh, you've tried it already.
Go check out my Mastodon. Listen to the end. And if you scroll back to, it would have been last Thursday or Friday, or it's also on AT Guys too.
These are over-the-ear closed-back headphones that also offer noise cancellation. And when I tell you the noise cancellation is good, it is good. and only $53 at atguys.com. So check those out for sure. Now, I do like this Bite. I think the developer you may be thinking of, but I could be wrong, could be Daniel Jaquit.
Yep, that's what it is.
Over at Red Sweater.
Yep, with, Red Sweater.
I think it's Black Ink.
That's the name of the app. If I would have actually pulled up unmute.show, I would have saw the name of it and told you. But yeah, Red Sweater Guy.
Yep, that's also the guy behind Mars Edit and Fast Grips.
What's Fast Grips?
Oh, man, I will send you a link to Fast Grips. I'm not going to try to explain it simply because like I haven't actually used it in a few years, and I don't want to misrepresent what the app does.
Gotcha.
But it's a very quick way to run scripts from your menu bar is one main feature of it.
Yeah, I know about Mars Edit because I've used Mars Edit on several sites.
Yeah, Mars Edit is an amazing tool for connecting to, it supports Word. I mean, I've always used it with WordPress. Like, I know it works with other systems, but I've always used it with WordPress. I actually need to check out the current version with blocks, because I know he was working on trying to do some things there with that. So maybe you have some, you know, input on how that works.
I've been switching back to the classic editor.
Yeah. Not liking the blocks. The blocks kind of getting irritating.
So this actually takes me to the conversation I wanted to talk to you more about. Blocks on the Mac are getting irritating. Actually, quite a lot of stuff on the Mac is getting irritating to me. And so I'm at the point where I'm almost switched back to Windows almost full time again. And I go back to those who don't know, we're streaming live on IAcast. And by the way, Rogue Amoebas, another amazing software. They can pay us anytime, but we'll mention them even if they never paid us a penny. Because now we are live streaming on YouTube, now that I got the block reset up and I didn't even have to stop the stream. It just kicked right in, which was pretty cool.
Just an aside, like Rogue Amoeba, if I were to go down the pathway that Mike is currently about to tell us about, with going completely back to Windows, I would probably spend like the $500, $350, $400 it would cost to get an M1 Mac Mini and just stick it in a corner, just to run Rogue Amoeba's tools with RIM. If I need to reach over there and do some stuff, but carry on, sir.
Yeah. So, anyways, I got the IAcast live stream up. You want to know what the reason was why we couldn't get it? Because I didn't have the ability to go in and set my password. Because I clicked the modify button and it popped up one of those little modals that you could see was there because VoiceOver read to you the both of the close buttons, the one at the top and one at the bottom of it, and the save button, but it didn't read you the fields in the modal. And so I jumped over to Windows and I'm like, huh, I wonder if this would work on Windows. I jumped over to Windows. Everything was labeled properly. The edit fields had proper names. And so I was able to do it. And then I finally got it up and running by doing that on Windows. And then this Logitech MX keys, I really was.
Hold on one second before he gets into this keyboard thing. I really want to put out another call to anybody that is a developer, and preferably if you're a web developer, with a deep knowledge of screen readers and accessibility. So I guess what I'm looking for is a blind web developer that's been doing this for a long time. Is this issue, because I run into this a lot too, is this issue on the Mac versus Windows a Mac VoiceOver issue? And I'm assuming you did this in Edge on the Mac.
No.
Safari?
Yeah. And that could be my problem too.
Yeah, because so here's the dilemma that I find myself in a lot of cases when I do get frustrated with the Mac, and it's usually the web that is the cause of the problem. Sometimes it's Safari. And when I can do something in Chrome or Brave or Firefox that I can't do in Safari, then I'm like, okay, it's a Safari issue. That's pretty easy for me. And I could be wrong, but that's pretty easy for me to blame Safari at that point. And I happen to know that Apple does not move nearly as fast as Google does with Chrome and Chromium, or even as Firefox does with the Gecko rendering engine, on implementing new web standards. Also know for a fact that Apple will occasionally implement a new web standard that is probably 3 years old at the time that they implement it and do their own custom modifications to it for whatever random reason. So easy to blame Safari if Safari doesn't work and Chrome does. Easy to blame Safari if, you know, Firefox works and it doesn't. However, there are some instances, such as this weird thing me and you both experienced with the warehouse interface for AT guys, right? Didn't work in Safari, didn't work in Chrome. For you, I'm guessing it didn't work in Edge.
Nope.
I went to Firefox on the Mac, and I have no problems whatsoever doing everything, and I don't know why this is.
Yeah. Yeah, and it was an evolving issue. It's not like it's always been that way. At first, I remember being able to do stuff in the warehouse in Edge.
Oh, I always did it in Safari. Like I have
in Safari. Yep.
I have a tab group in Safari for AT guys. Like it is a separate whole tab group that I can bring up by pressing a keystroke that used to launch. It actually still launches all of these things. It launches the back end to the store. It launches the warehouse, Invoice Ninja. And there's something else that I'm not. Gusto.
Oh, Gusto.
I don't do Zendesk in Safari, man.
That's another app that is that Windows. I'm sorry, not Windows, but is that VoiceOver or is that the web browsers? Because all the web browsers render the table in the same way.
Yeah. And I've seen issues where a table works fine. And I've seen issues that go the other way too, where like, I can't get this to render in Chrome on the Mac mm-hmm. correctly and navigate, but I can go to Safari and always great. But everything else about the web page isn't great. So it's like, oh, okay, let me copy the link once I get to where I want to be in Chrome and then paste that in Safari and then log in. And now I'm on the screen I need to be on to do the thing I need to do, and I can navigate the table. But my question is really, what is at the core of this problem? Like, is it the website and, you know, maybe the way that it's trying to render JavaScript or whatever, and the way the browser chooses to handle that? Or is it seriously a deficiency that sometimes, you know, for whatever ironic reason, doesn't manifest itself with VoiceOver on the Mac being way behind the curve? Because other than a few features that they've copied over from iOS here recently, and I do mean a few features, VoiceOver doesn't seem to be getting a lot of improvements on the Mac over the past couple of years. Whereas you look at VoiceOver on iOS and iPadOS, and like, you can tell somebody somewhere really is motivated and is thinking and adding features there, where we're not getting that same. And it's not a, like, bringing VoiceOver on iOS up to parity with the Mac. Like, that's not it at all, because they're well past where the Mac is. There are some features that have been copied from the Mac. Let's say that navigation style, whether you want grouped or flat. Was it grouped or flat?
Yeah.
Which does, you know, evoke thoughts of interacting and not interacting with stuff on macOS if you're using trackpad commander like that. But also, it doesn't really make me, that's the only thing that makes me think about the Mac's VoiceOver. Like, nothing else about VoiceOver on iOS that even in any vague way is similar to the Mac. And I'm really curious if these weirdnesses on websites, whether it's going to Windows, is like, there's no problem with them using, you know, JAWS or NVDA. You know, I have no problem navigating Zendesk interface, for example, you know, other than it being Zendesk, but yeah, still is a much better experience on the Mac. I mean, this is the reason I purchased, you know, Parallels a year ago for the first time, was couldn't do my job, man. But I'm curious, like, is it one of those scenarios where VoiceOver being behind the curve is not handling things on the, because the web is a constantly evolving thing, right? It's always moving. Like, there's not a hard target to be like, oh, it's not like writing an app for macOS where you can say, okay, this, that, and the other, and, you know, you're done. Boom, your app is accessible. And so long as you don't break anything, it'll probably continue to work with VoiceOver great. Shout out to Rogue Amiibo as a perfect example of one of those things. Whereas if you were trying to create something like RoboMeeba's audio hijack, or just a routing app on the web, like, it might work great today until they update something, because we went from, you know, they stopped using JavaScript, vanilla JavaScript, and went to TypeScript, or they stopped using, you know, Vue.js and switched to,
Well, even simpler than that, like CleanFeed. I don't know if you've played with it right now, but it used to be in Chrome or Edge, you could not navigate those dropdown. Like, when I found out the other day that you could navigate them again, I posted that on Mastodon, and Steven's like, yay, I don't have to use first letter navigation. You still can't?
I still can't. Now, to be fair, I'm in Brave, so that could be the issue, because I have not switched back to Chrome yet, just because I have stuff kind of set up in Brave and I don't want to go set it up again in Chrome. Yeah. But I still can't do it. So that makes me wonder, is there a, and that's another, now some of the issues me and you both are facing, and I know somebody out there is sending an email right now to feedback@technicallyworking.show that says, well, it could be how your settings are configured. Yeah, sometimes that could be the case.
Yep.
But a lot of times it doesn't matter. Like, stuff on the web with VoiceOver is very weird. And I don't know if it's VoiceOver, if it's Apple, which I suspect in some cases it's Safari, but in a lot of cases I'm really curious, is it VoiceOver? Because I've started running into situations, and for years, and you probably can go back to our first podcast, Demasi and Michael Just Talking Tech, or the DM series, I think maybe an easier way to find it, where we both have said, one thing I like about the Mac is I don't have to tab all the time.
Uh-huh.
I hate when people tell me tab, 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 because I don't tab on the Mac. That's not what I do. There's a lot of instances on the web where I have to tab, and that's the only reason, that's the only way it works.
and it doesn't work right on the Mac.
Nope, you can't read a edit field like what you just described with that particular application, right? That particular web app where you couldn't see the edit fields to change your password, right? I've experienced that. And tabbing, believe it or not, a lot of times has gotten me into the field. Mm-hmm. Then we get down to, did they properly label their edit field so you know what the hell you're about to type?
Yeah, which is now, a whole other level.
Yeah, now on that screen, it could have been fairly easy because it probably just asked for your new password and verify your new password. So, you know, fairly, and it would also be a secure field. But I have experienced form fields.
That's just edit.
Forms. Where it's just edit. Like I tab into it and it says edit.
And you can't VO left or right arrow because that takes you out of that entire dialogue and doesn't just read the title label. So, yeah, been there, done that. So, anyways, WordPress. Gutenberg and block or and the classic editor. I've been making some changes on some sites and keep jumping over to Windows, and it's a lot easier. Like I told, maybe it was on Mastodon. I'm like, I'm not going
to hold on. See, we got to go back because I cut you off in the middle of talking about the MX keys.
I was getting there. I was going to go back there. Yep.
Okay.
No, appreciate the reminder. But I posted on Mastodon, I'm not going to develop on the Mac right now, at least not doing the WordPress stuff that I'm doing, because when I switch over to Windows, it just works. The only problem I have is when I switch over to Windows, I can't copy and paste stuff from the Mac because I'm not using a Parallels machine. I'm using a physical computer. So that took me down the path of talking to my AI, Pi.ai, and Googling and looking up information. And apparently the MX Keys keyboard with the Logi software supports a universal copy and paste across devices. So you can copy from your Mac and paste on the Windows computer if they're both on the same Wi-Fi network, and you just use the buttons to switch between devices and then your keystrokes work. So I said, oh, that'll solve all my problems. And then I went and downloaded the Logitech software and remembered what Sean and Steve said about it. And I'm like, okay, never mind. Not going to play with this. Although I went to go talk to, or like send an email because I had Pi write me an email because I'm like, here, I'm frustrated. Here's all I'm seeing. This is a feature I want to do. You told me all about it. Now I can't use it because the software is not accessible. Write me a support email to help explain this. And, tell them how frustrating it can be to have software that I can't use, so I can't get the full value out of this hardware I purchased. And it wrote me a letter, and then I went to the website, to Logitech's website, and I got a chatbot. I'm like, I'm not in the mood to put a chatbot against a chatbot today. So, moved on with my day. I haven't even tried it on Windows, but yeah, that's where my frustration with Logitech was coming from, because... you know they could make their software accessible.
My thing with software and accessibility is most of the time, and there's a recent episode of the Accidental Tech Podcast where this comes up again as a thing. And I remember previous episodes or previous interviews with Marco Armand, who happens to be the developer of Overcast, around different things. One of his conversations was about accessibility. One was just about interface in general. But for me, a lot of times when it comes down to accessibility, all you have to do is just give a crap. Like just give a crap about it at all. And a lot of times that puts you way ahead of where you need to be. It doesn't make it perfect. And I'll give a perfect example of an app of just giving a crap about accessibility in the first place. Mac Whisper. Wasn't perfect when it came out. Like there were some issues there, but for the most part, we were able to use that app hands down. And I remember sending the developer an email shortly after downloading it and saying like, you know, hey, I appreciate, you know, the app. First of all, this is great because I didn't have to go through all this command line stuff to install all this stuff and start piping files into a thing because I really didn't feel like doing it because I couldn't be bothered to do all that because I didn't want to do it. But also, I really appreciate the accessibility here. There are a couple of things that, you know, could be tweaked. But overall, out of the gate, like this is much better than I expected. Mm-hmm. Because generally when I hear about an app like that on the podcast or across the internet in some form or fashion, you get it and it sounds great and you open it up and you know, all you get is button. And he wrote back and he's like, yeah, I actually had somebody that was blind working with me on the very early alphas of the app to try to, you know, get that working. Again, just giving a crap can go a long way when it comes to anything being better than your competitors. For a company like Logitech, I really feel like at this point, and I hate to say it this way, because I'm not going to say I've been proven wrong. It's just that I've been around long enough to see companies change, or see the dynamics within a company change, or the priorities within a company change. Zoom used to be not Zoom.us, the software, but Zoom, the recording field recorder company. I've been around long enough to go from they could care less about a blind person trying to use their stuff to, oh, you got to turn the accessibility off on these new H1E or the H40, like these new essentials lineup of H recorders, right? And that's not they all of a sudden woke up one day and realized something. Or it doesn't mean I was wrong about them 10 years ago. It just means that the company has changed, or the priorities of that company have changed over the years. Leadership has probably changed.
I have a Focusrite device on my desk. Asked me 3 years ago, would have been like, nope, they don't care about accessibility. I don't want any of that.
I ain't buying crap from them. And again, this is one of those scenarios where I would have said years ago, don't buy a Focusrite device. And when we talked about the Vocasters, I was like, hey, they did a thing and they actually cared about the accessibility of it. Like, they built an app that is accessible on both the Mac and Windows, which, again, is not normal. Even for companies who may actually give a little bit of a crap. If their cross-platform applications, either their Electron, which sucks, I don't think they could have done this out with Electron, but you usually get the devotion of accessibility time to the Windows version mm-hmm. of an app, because there are more JAWS users in the world, never mind NVDA or Narrator or any other Windows screen reader. JAWS is what you hear and what you get key commands for from people.
Yep.
Down to I've had people who know I'm using a Mac and they try to give me commands like I'm using JAWS. Like, shit is stupid. I don't understand it. So again, I applaud them. And it doesn't mean I was wrong about them before. Maybe my perception of what they were doing was wrong, but I'm going to forever stand on the fact that this is what you gave me, because there was never a conversation or a I can't say that word. There was never a response from their support that indicated, anything different to me than 3 years ago, what I said or what you said. They don't care about accessibility. Or what I said 10 years ago about Zoom, or 5 years ago about Zoom. They don't mm-hmm. care about blind people using their stuff. It doesn't mean you have to jump over the moon to prove something to me, because who am I? The point being, I stand by what I said 3 years ago, because at that time, that's the only perception you gave me. Just like when people make judgment calls about what Apple is or is not doing, or what their focus is, you don't share anything else. So when we as Mac platform users look at the bugs with VoiceOver, or look at the lingering issues and the lack of development on VoiceOver, sure, a super nice person or somebody who just wants to, not offend anyone might say, well, yeah, there's problems, but they're probably working on them inside of Apple. I'm going to tell you, I don't give a good god what they're doing inside of Apple, because they're not communicating to anybody who writes to them about accessibility. So therefore, the perception I have and what my daily usage is with macOS is they ain't caring about VoiceOver on the Mac right now. I feel like where a lot of Mac lovers were several years ago, before the Apple Silicon transition happened, where, oh, Apple doesn't care about the Mac as a platform anymore. It's all about iOS and the iPad. Whereas now those people's tunes have changed. Dramatic's like, oh, the Mac is so great now, and they're really focused on it. It's because they figured out they couldn't kill it. But when you look at the grand total of users, I mean, literally just comparing the user base of iOS devices to macOS, like, it's ridiculous numbers in favor of iOS or iPadOS. You compare the number of VoiceOver users, or even Zoom users, I would imagine, too. I mean, accessibility users at all between macOS and iOS. Like, those numbers probably get even stupider. Like, it's just ridiculous. It's like, oh, there's, 100 million users over here on iOS, and it's like 10,000 on the Mac. where are you going to put your resources towards?
Right.
I completely get that. Yeah. Right. I can understand that from a logistical standpoint. However, we, at least I do, maybe everybody doesn't do it anymore, but I still hold Apple to a higher standard, partially because they do it to themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Partially because they should do better. Like, sorry, man, you charge too much money for your stuff not to be great.
All of a sudden, when you're looking at price-wise, do I want to be productive and pay for the screen reader, or do I want to... I mean, you can be productive on them.
Well, you
can be.
It's not even a point of paying for the screen reader, right? Like, at this point, the only transition for me, because I don't spend as much time as you do, because the one difference in me and you, I think, going to the Parallels universe to begin with, well, one, you got Windows computers in the house, so you're occasionally scrolling with those anyway. But even going to Parallels, you would start off in Parallels to do a thing, and let's say Zendesk, and then you would just stay over there.
Yep, yep.
Where I would have my Parallels operating in coherence mode. So it was like, oh, I can command tab to Google Chrome and Windows. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the reasons also, too, I haven't switched back to Chrome on the Mac, because Chrome's running on Windows. That's how I know where I'm at.
Yeah, oh, I get it.
Chrome, okay, now I'm in Zendesk. Oh, Safari, now I'm in, you know,
Mac OS.
You know, now I'm back in, you know, the tab for the store or whatever.
Right.
Or Firefox, you know, now I'm in the warehouse interface nowadays, you know, these days. So, but that's one of the, I'm not going to say losses in productivity for me, but it would be a little bit of a drop. And then come back up for me productivity wise going to Windows. And it's not really the adjustment to the screen reader. It's the loss of some of the tools that I don't even think about. I'm hitting keys for on the Mac.
Yep.
I don't know how Text Expander works on the Mac. I mean, I don't know how Text Expander works on Windows. But, you know, my computer was broke for like a month until I finally was like, okay, I got to fix this. And I just installed Text Expander inside and fixed it.
Usually it's for work because it's got stuff. It's like, I know what needs to go here, but I don't feel like going to find the text.
And it's like, look,
I'm just going to install Text Expander.
The third time I navigated with Launch Bar to this particular file to copy the text and paste it in and then paste the key in for someone, I was like, you know, I really got to stop this stupidness.
Yeah.
Let me just install Text Expander. Brew install Text Expander. Yep.
Set it up and then sign in.
OPEN /APP tab. TEXTE tab expander dot app hit right. Return. Oh, now it's open sign in. Okay. Now we're done.
All right. Go through the permissions.
Oh, yeah. That thing. You know, that whole process.
Been doing Python development. I'm liking this more than I thought I would. But you just mentioned something that really made me jump onto this next topic. How in the hell do I get my tab autocomplete to work in Terminal? I'm sure it's got to be a setting or something on the Mac. Because on Windows, it works just fine. But on the Mac, I hit tab and I hear the little click sound.
I know how I do it, but I'm trying to think, is there a more direct way? Because the way I do it is a little, I'm also still using Bash because I intentionally always set my thing back to Bash.
Mm-hmm.
So I was going to say the first thing I would do is hit tab twice just to make sure it's not auto, trying to auto, like your options for autocomplete are not, you know, a ton of things, like a couple of different things, because it will give you that sound regardless of whether or not it's working or not. I have a line in my Bash configuration file that does two things. It implements autocomplete or tab completion, and it also implements it in such a way that is not case sensitive either.
Ah, okay.
That makes sense. So like your documents folder. So if you were to type --DOC and then hit tab, if you have it the standard tab completion way, it's not going to autocomplete documents because it's case insensitive and your documents folder starts with a capital D. Just for record, all of your folders start with capital letters. That irritates me because when I create folders, typically I don't create them with capital letters.
Right.
But, you know, whatever. I don't want to have to think about whether I did or didn't. I just want you to autocomplete the thing. I'm trying to tab complete. So I can send you what I have in my Bash file, and you can look up to see how to do that with ZSH, because I assume that's what you're using in your terminal.
Yeah.
To implement that. But that's how I do it. But, yeah, my tab completions always work, man, because I refuse not to. Also, this is a reason to back up or copy over your
profile.
Config stuff for terminal and stuff before you wipe your computer. Yeah.
Otherwise, things don't work right. VS Code, though, man, that has been my new favorite thing. I'm really liking it on both platforms. I've been getting my files back and forth. So using the git commit and then git push on the Mac after I'm done writing on the Mac, and then I'll go git pull the files to the Windows computer and then run the programs on the Windows computer to see if there's any issues or if everything displays the same way it does, which has been kind of an interesting way. The real reason I've been doing it that way is because Tab Autocomplete works on Windows and not on the Mac. So all I have to do is type in git add dot and then git commit, put a little message on why I'm committing that, and then git push.
Be careful with that git add dot.
Okay. Okay. Good to know.
Because that's adding everything that's in that directory. Yes. Okay.
Yes. I learned my lesson the hard way, remember?
I'm also going to give you another Git tip since you've gotten comfortable with it. So let's say you're working in a directory that is a, you know, Git repo.
Mm-hmm.
And everything that you want to commit is already there.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like it's already a part of your working tree, which means Git already knows about this file. You're not adding a new file to your commit. You're just like, you've updated a file and you want to now commit that, right? Git commit hyphen hyphen ALL, or I think git commit hyphen A actually works as well.
Okay.
Space, and then do your hyphen M space, your quotes, and put in your commit message and hit return. That will add everything that has been modified on that current branch to the commit and commit it.
That is handy. Right now, I'm just working with safer, one file, but
yeah, that's safer than doing git dot, because if you get in the habit of doing git add dot, then you're going to eventually at some point commit some stuff that you had in that folder that shouldn't have been committed.
Ah, okay.
Whereas if the file that you're already using, the file that you want to commit, or the commit that you want to add contains files that already git already knows about, so you're not having to add a new file.
Mm-hmm.
To it, like this is, you know, let's say you got project2.py that mm-hmm. you're working on, right? And you've already done the original git add project2.py and right. committed that. So now git is aware that this file exists as a part of your working directory. In future, git commit hyphen a space, you know, git commit space hyphen a, lowercase a.
Yep.
I'm not
hyphen
sure
if that matters or not. To give it the
hyphen M message. And then your commit message. Yep. In return, we'll commit anything that has been modified at that point on your thing because it already knows about it. And then you will, because I only use git add, honestly, only use git add when I'm adding a new file that git is not currently aware of that is in that directory that I'm working out of.
But you have to make git aware of files that you put in the directory, correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
So, and that's why I said be careful with git add dot, because you could add like a practice file or something or some random git spacing in there, and that's going to add whatever's in that directory that git doesn't know about. Whereas git add explicit file name says add this file.
And then once it's added, you can just commit it.
Yep.
When you make your changes with that commit dash A dash M flags.
Yep.
Okay.
And for whatever reason, you can't do dash AM, which sometimes works with certain terminal commands. You can't do that with Git. So you have to do dash A space dash M. At least that's how it has worked for me in the past and is what I continue to do.
Gotcha. Sweet. So yeah, Python is fun. Let's see if I'm still doing it.
Python is interesting.
Yeah.
And I got to get caught up on the classwork, but just, you know, as I've been exploring it, like I see now, I think why a lot of people start with that, or a lot of programmers suggest they start with Python or something like that, because it's of the type of language. And I think there's a couple of reasons. It's not super low level. Like there's, you know, if you're trying to do other stuff, you want to start with like assembly language or C or something. But a lot of things there can help you, because I recognize, I'm not going to say conventions from Python necessarily, because Python is Python and JavaScript is JavaScript and et cetera, et cetera. But I can see where the object oriented nature of Python definitely helps with dealing with JavaScript, because a lot of that is object oriented, at least from our perspective. And there's also ways of writing object oriented PHP which again helps. And but I also think my dabbling in self-taught, I need to know how to do this thing at this moment with JavaScript and PHP over the years has also helped me more easily pick up some of the concepts in Python and be able to kind of be like, oh, I see how that works right now. Like, that's easy. Let me do this thing. And if I write that thing, that should work, right? Oh, okay. It does work.
I was playing with some CSS the other day and I got something to work. And it's just, it's an amazing feeling when you're like, it should work this way. And then you do it and then it works that way. And yeah, I like that feeling.
Yeah. CSS can get real messy.
Yes. Especially when you can't see it.
Yeah. That's the hard part. Like when your CSS code is valid, but it doesn't do the thing that you told it to do, which I've had happen to me. And it's like, this code is valid. Like I run it through a validator. Like, and it was like, oh yeah, that's valid CSS. But you put it on a web page and like, no, it doesn't do that thing. And it's like, but I told it to turn the whole page red. So like everything should be red. The text should be red. The background should be red.
And everything that doesn't work. And yeah. It's not.
And that is the, I mean, I picked this up from reading people's, you know, like tutorials and stuff or explanations of things over the years. Like if you want to test that your CSS is working the way it expects, turn everything red just to make sure it works. Cause it's easy to identify, hey, is that text red? Okay. That means the code I wrote does affect the text I want to affect. Now turn it the color you actually want to turn it. But very quick, because you can get somebody that doesn't know anything about what you're doing. Be like, hey, look at this page for me. Do you see red text at the top? No, the whole background is red. It's like, oh wait, that's not what I meant to do.
I've surprised some IRA agents because I've been using the small business offer lately. Because you know, I can have Ben help me and stuff. But when I want to do it, I just want to do it. So I'm like, here's what I'm trying to do. Here's the document I'm trying to match colors on. Is this the way that it should be? No, it's not. I'm like, all right, hold on a couple of moments. Let me go make a change here. Let me do this. Okay, now reload it. Reload the document or reload the page? Reload the page. Then she reloaded the page. She's like, oh, you did do it. That made a big difference. It's interesting to hear the excitement of some people about how you can make a big difference, especially when you know what the problem is, but you haven't done it. Yeah.
Yeah. And I've had similar experiences with IRA agents too, because I'm like, okay, this is what I'm trying to mimic. You know, look at that. Look at this. And they're like, oh, no, it doesn't look like that at all. Okay. Hold on. Okay, now reload that page. Oh, you fixed it. Oh, you moved that picture.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, oh, take a look at this image and tell me how it looks in context to the page. Oh, it's super big and like it takes up way too much space. Okay, hold on one sec. Okay, reload the page. You fixed it and now the picture's on the left and the text is on the right. That is amazing. But it's, you know, it's like you don't know anything about programming. You don't know how, I mean, simple something like that really is if you know what you're doing. Like it's not even complicated.
You just need some visual input to know.
I just want to make sure. Yeah, is it the way it should look? But for them on their end, it's like, because they're not usually web people.
Yeah.
It's like, oh my God, I didn't know it was that. Like, it's amazing because of how quickly you just did a thing. Like, it's not even a, oh my God, this blind person just did this amazing thing. It's like, is it really that simple?
Right.
Like, oh my God. It's like,
maybe I should build a website for my grandma.
It's like, oh, you know, you pull up and, you know, my car is making this very strange sound, and you go in there, you pull a sock out of your, you know, tailpipe, and it fixes it. And they're like, oh my God, that's it? And it's like, yeah, that was it.
Yeah.
No, I ain't never seen that. But you get the point. It's like a super simple thing. Like, you know, man, we cooked chicken and waffles yesterday.
Really?
As we're recording this for people. This is Saturday, so Friday for lunch, we did chicken and waffles.
Hmm.
Yeah. So we made enough money in the month of March. We had enough of a profit that we were able to spend about $450. It's actually a little bit less than that on a professional grade waffle maker.
Nice. That's
awesome. Because one of our best customers has been asking about, she's like, the one thing I've been wanting BEP to do since I started working here is make chicken and waffles. And I told him at the beginning of the process, man, we're going to see if we can make that happen for you. Before we're out of here, we're going to do chicken and waffles. I actually promised it to him. I was like, before we're out of here, we're going to figure out a way to do chicken and waffles. So we made enough of a profit to buy a waffle maker.
That's awesome.
So we did that yesterday. Funny thing is, the guy who's been wanting all this time wasn't there yesterday.
Oh. Isn't that how it goes, though?
Yeah, yeah. And the funny thing is, I mean, he did get to try the original when we tested out the chicken and waffles and decided we weren't going to use the pre-breaded chicken tenders. We were going to hand bread our own chicken tenders and fry them. So he did get, you know, did get to try it. Yeah. And, you know, like I pointed out yesterday to the class, because it really is kind of sad that he wasn't here for this. I was like, well, you know, Russell get to walk around for the rest of his life. And anytime any waffle is made in BEP at any given time, you can say he's responsible for that waffle maker.
Yep.
And sure I ain't even gonna disagree with him, because honestly, I wouldn't have bought it. Other than, yeah, we told him we was gonna do it.
Yep. So
we did it.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
I really still don't get the whole fascination with chicken and waffles, but you know, whatever.
To each their own.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. There you go. Chicken and waffles don't make any sense.
So do you want to mention what else happened to BEP this week?
I don't know what else happened to BEP. What are you talking about? Oh, yeah, that thing. Man, I left my certificate at school, too. I'm going to bring it home because of course.
Were you just being a smartass there for a second, or did you forget
what I was talking about? Look, man, that was Monday. It's Saturday. Like, in all seriousness, though, I was not trying to be funny at all. That's how life has been for me for the past months. It's like, it's Friday. I have no idea what the hell we did Monday. Like, I don't know what we did yesterday. So what happened else this week in BEP for me? Actually, for the entire class, is on Monday we took our serve safe test and everybody passed.
Yay.
And everybody passed with decent scores. Like, nobody barely squeaked by. Like, I thought I was going to barely, maybe I had it in my head, like, I'll probably squeak by with like a 70 or 71, which again, I wouldn't care. Like, as long as I pass it, I'm done. Like, I ain't got to worry about that no more. Because everything else from here is downhill, right? Once I pass serve safe, because I don't recall, it's because it's been very, I mean, it's early part of the program or discussing what the curriculum kind of looked like with us. I don't think that you're not able to get your license as a vendor in Alabama without passing ServSafe, but in a lot of cases, it's pointless having it because a lot of facilities, even if you're not cooking anything, they require ServSafe just, you know, for whatever reasons, right? Like reasons, you know, I don't care that you're teaching people how to use the iPhone. We want you to have a JAWS certification before we're going to pay you. It's like, it don't make any sense, but okay.
Yeah.
So not passing ServSafe would have meant getting a license, either not getting it or getting it and not being able to apply. And I actually think the facility that I want to apply for here may require you to have serve safe. I have seen one that didn't have any cooking facility at all. It's like, oh, must be serve safe certified. Like, oh, okay. Also must pass a background check. I'm like, okay, well, that takes out some people on driving for them because you ain't gonna pass. But the whole class passed, which is great. I was actually right in the middle of the pack, although to be completely honest about it, I think our young lady would have passed with the highest score had she not done the thing that people who get extremely nervous about tests do, which is she went back after finishing, like before she submitted her test, and revisited questions and changed some answers. She actually came out with a lower score than mine, but I think that's the reason.
Yeah.
I basically kind of blew through it, not because it was super easy, but because some of the stuff I did actually know, and I knew more of it than I thought I did. And the things I wasn't sure about, like, I took my gut instinct answer, like, which one makes sense here? And so, you know, came out on top. I passed it. And that was the game, main thing, was passing it. And got a certificate, and I forgot to bring it to the house because I think Tia probably wants to put it on the wall or something. I don't care. I'm done with it. Like, it's over for me.
Time to move on. Next challenge. Get that one tackled.
Yeah. Take this quiz Monday for this chapter of the rules. Pick up a thermometer. So me and you talked about this thermometer before. I think we did. And I'm going to give a plug because we don't sell this on AT Guys. But you can get this at the adaptationstore.org. I'm going to try this thermometer. I will report back to everybody in a couple of weeks on how this works. Well, at least within the next month, the next time we fry something for breakfast, I mean for lunch on a Friday. So, and this is where asking questions helps. So I know I've told you privately, I don't know if we mentioned it on the show, it's not a big deal, but one of my classmates, or the male student in the class, is a certified chef, like he has his chef's license. Whether that has a bearing or not is really immaterial to this conversation, but he's been doing the frying. So the days that we've done chicken wings, he's fried the chicken wings and pulled them out and all that. And he's been tipping the chicken wings. Like, you know, when we did chicken tenders yesterday with the chicken and waffles, he, you know, was tipping the things and making sure they were at temperature. I was erroneously thinking that he was using like an infrared thermometer or something, like pulling up a piece of the chicken so it's out of the grease and then tipping the surface of it with an infrared thermometer and then, you know, determining what the temperature was. That is not what he's doing. He's using a very similar to the talking thermometer that's sold on you can also find these on Amazon, to be fair, but the one on Adaptation Store, the reason I'm recommending that one, I'm going to buy another one because I may have broken the first one or it may have been bad. I don't know. But it has a probe that you fold out from within the body and you stick the end of it in the meat. It has a little dimple so you know how far to insert it into the meat. And you press a button if you want it to speak aloud your temperature. Mm-hmm. The difference in the one from San Francisco Lighthouse site at Adaptation Store or adaptations.org, I think, is actually the domain. Hey, Mike, check that for me before I keep saying it and it's not right. But the one from San Francisco Lighthouse's store, works just like the one on Amazon, other than the fact the one from San Francisco Lighthouse actually, and it says instant, you know, instant read thermometer. It is instant. The one from Amazon, I gave it to you because it instantly shows your temperature when you're checking it, but it takes it about 5 seconds to tell you what it is. So I quickly discarded that when I first bought it because I was checking stuff on the grill with it. At first, of course, I'm going to go to the grill when I'm cooking because, hey, I can cook a steak without a thermometer. I've been doing it for 20 years. Like, so, you know, who cares? This is more a test to, hey, does the tool work the way it's supposed to work? So you open up the grill and anybody that does a lot of grilling or barbecue, you know, you don't want, especially barbecue, you don't want to lose all that heat. You're standing there with the top open for 10 seconds waiting on this damn thermometer to tell you 127 degrees. Oh, okay. Well, close it. Now you got to wait for it to get back up to temperature. Uh-huh. Just let a whole bunch of heat out.
You can't time it anymore. And yeah, it's all mess.
Nope. It's all screwed up. Yeah. So that one got discarded quickly. The one from San Francisco Lighthouse, does actually read like within a second, like literally, I'm not exaggerating. Like you stick it in the meat, you press the button, you're getting the temperature.
Gotcha.
Like almost by the time you're done pressing the button, you're getting the temperature. Yeah. So this is the type of thermometer, for those who are not familiar, is like a body of the thermometer where all the brains and stuff are. And then you got like a little probe that folds out. So it like swings out. And then that's what you use to temp your meat or temp whatever you're checking. But this is actually what he's using. It's like, oh.
Okay.
Well, damn, I could do that.
Yeah.
I'm going to go buy another one of these things. I'm going to have it delivered over there to Gentry. I also got to buy another cane. I'm glad. See, this is another example. What do we say sometimes? Sometimes procrastination can be to your advantage.
What'd you do?
I broke my little adjustable height cane that I have actually fell in love with. And I realized how much I love it when I had to go back to a standard folding cane. And like, I hate it. It's crap. It's heavy as I don't know what, man. And it's one of the lighter NLB style folding canes, but like, it feels so heavy and that stupid metal tip. Anyway, so I broke that cane. All my fault. It was not a defect in the cane itself. It was because I had a cart run off the sidewalk. And instead of, you know, storing the cane properly before I tried to move the cart, I was like, oh, well, I'll just, you know, move the cart while with one of the hands is also holding the cane sideways. Yeah, that's what happened.
And then you heard the noise and you're like, yep, probably shouldn't have did that. Like, oh,
it's all over now. Okay. Yep. You've done this before.
Yep. Huh? Yep. Should have made a smart choice now. Too late.
So all this week I've been planning on ordering a new cane and also ordering another ceramic tip because that's also what I've been using. And I like the ceramic tip better than the NFB, you know, metal tip, which, yeah, I know, thanks to Doug, it came off. I probably could have found out from somebody else, but Doug is the one. You know, he just took that off the foot of off the bottom of a child's school desk. Like, I mean, it makes sense now that you said it, but no, right? I didn't know. But I've always been a fan of and it's one reason I've continued to buy like the NFB style canes or any cane that will, you know, I won't use a cane that doesn't use the NFB style metal tips for years is because the feedback off those is so good. Well, when I bought this adjustable height cane, I got the ceramic. I tried out a ceramic tip. So like, I want to try this out. I'll see how it does. Now, going back to a folding cane with a traditional metal tip, and a B style tip, feels like somebody has put mittens on my cane tip. I am firmly in the camp of the ceramic tips, and I've been using the ceramic tip like literally daily. I mean, you know how much walking I do, you know, around and stuff, since the beginning of the year, prior to the beginning of the year, actually. And I still haven't had to replace the one that I have now.
But you ordered the second one just because,
No, I haven't ordered it yet. I haven't ordered it yet. But I will order a second one just to make sure.
You should send me this adjustable height cane. I think you sent it to me before, but send it again because I'm interested.
Yep, I'll send it to you. Because, I got to go. And one reason I like, and there's a couple of things about it not to like, but the overall thing that I do like about it is that you can twist it and adjust the height and then twist it. And when you lock it in place, like it stays and it doesn't, you know, typically come loose as you're using your cane. And what I like about that is the adjustable height means if I'm in a crowded space, I can shorten my cane up without giving up my cane length.
Yeah.
Or I can shorten my cane up, in spaces where I don't need, or if I'm getting in the car, I can just, you know, shorten it all the way down and it becomes like a kind of walking stick, but it'll fit perfectly on the side of the door between my seat and the car door right there in that little slot.
So it doesn't fold. It just gets to be small and you adjust how long it is. Kind of like a collapsing cane?
Kind of like
a telescoping cane. That's what
Kind of like a telescoping cane. Yep. Except that this is only two pieces. So there's the main big piece, and then you can pull out like this inside piece that will extend out to as far as 69 inches.
That seems weird to me, but I got to try this because I could see the value in that. Because sometimes I want a long cane. Sometimes I want to walk really quick, just get where I need to go down the sidewalk and know, you know, 3/4 of a second instead of 1/10 of a second that I'm about to smash my face into a pole. So I have enough time to move my head to the left a little bit. You know, that type of stuff. So I got to, I got to check this out. And then other times I'm in an airport. I traveled with, I think it was a 63-inch or 65-inch. Somewhere around there. It was 65 inches. I traveled with a straight cane from NFB, and it was really convenient because they just threw it in the overhead bin. But when I was going through the security, I'm like, you know, I kind of wish my cane was a little bit shorter. Not a lot shorter, but a little bit shorter, just so people would stop tripping on it. So,
And see, that's that's what made me try this cane out, was because I was like, okay, they have two different sizes. We'll put a link in the show notes to it as well. There's a shorter size that goes up. I think it may max out at 57 inches, and then there's a longer one that maxes out at 69 inches. But the nice thing is it's infinitely adjustable between whatever the minimum height and maximum height is, right? So if I want my cane to be, you know, super short, just enough for me to, you know, maybe tap the person's heels in front of me when I'm in line, but I'm not holding my cane, or I don't have this huge thing poking up over my head because I'm just kind of holding it in the middle so I can swish just a little bit in front of me, hey, I can shorten it up. But like you, I'm so glad you learned the value of having a longer cane.
You're the reason I even explored that, because my canes were so short. Now when I go use one of my older canes, like, how did I even get by with this thing?
Like, man, when you're walking fast and you're trying to get somewhere, like, hey, having, like you said, just 3/4 of a second gives you enough time to shift your body the right way.
Yep.
You don't hit that thing. Not, hey, the cane and my body arrived at the same time. Like, okay.
Because that has happened.
This cane is really helpful.
I knew I was hitting it as I was hitting it.
It's like, oh, pole, boom. Oh, well, dang. So that's what I like. The ceramic tip for me, for feedback wise, like, it's very similar to the type of feedback you can get with a metal tip cane, but better, like infinitely better. So I am ordering another one. Like I said, the procrastination on just not ordering it this week and being a little busy, but also it's like, something just kept tweaking me, like, no, I don't. I mean, it's like, oh, I should go in here and go order this cane. Now I'm going to start doing other stuff. It's like, let me look at this, you know, let me look at this new e-commerce platform over here. I need to start, you know, getting familiar with or something. Long story short, in this particular instance, and I do have a folding cane, so it's working. Always have a backup.
Yes, always. Tip
out of this, always have a backup cane.
Yep.
Even if it's one you hate, like, always have a backup cane.
A backup is better than none.
Exactly. Exactly. For the longest time, and I may even go back to getting like a collapsible. I thought about a collapsible or telescoping cane, but I think I'll just keep the folding cane. I got it kind of fits. Mm-hmm. But I will be ordering a new adjustable height cane with the ceramic tip. So I order another ceramic tip. The one I have is still good, but I think I'm a convert now. One thing about this adjustable height cane too is it doesn't use that typical kind of, you know, how the NFB canes are with the metal tips, like they kind of snap over the mm-hmm. end of them. Mm-hmm. So this actually screws in. All of the tips for this cane screw in. And I forget who makes these tips. You would probably recognize the company name if I could remember who they were. Because they make a lot of different. They also make canes as well as tips. But this is one of their tips, the ceramic. They also have the NFB metal style tip if you prefer that. But it screws into the bottom. Hmm. They also have the roller ball. Like the little small marshmallow tip that rolls. Which I have one of those. And I looked at it. When I got it, and I opened it up, I looked at it. I was like, you know, I really don't know why I got this. Because I'm not going to use it.
Yep.
But it was a whole new different style of cane. I was like, oh, well, let's try the different tips. You know, I'll get the ceramic tip, try that out. I'll get the metal tip because I know how I feel about those. I'll try the little roller tip. You know, it might be. Oh, I actually do know why I bought the roller tip. Now I'm reminded. And this is a benefit to having a cane that allows for different types of tips. Walking through grass, like let's say you're walking through a, you know, flowery meadow, or you're going through the woods, which this guy with the what's that cane,
all-terrain cane,
that cane, like he actually got me to thinking about this. And then I randomly was out in the middle of a field with Tia and some of her friends one night, and I was like, you know, having a roller tilt right about now might actually be good.
Right. Yeah, there you go,
because this keeps getting stuck in the grass. So that's why I actually bought that roller tilt. It's also why I hadn't used it. I'm glad I reminded myself why I bought it though.
Now you know
why. I really have forgotten.
So now that we've been recording for 103 hours and 54 minutes, I love it when it does that. Whenever we get over 100 minutes, it says 103 hours and 54 minutes and 55 minutes. Those are some pretty fast minutes.
What is time anyway? I mean, you know, it's just a construct in our minds to help us understand, you know, what we think is going on in the world. So, shout out to everybody who listens to the show. I truly appreciate it. We both truly appreciate it. Notice I've been doing a lot of first person conversations today. Oh, me too. It's like Mike's here.
It has officially become both of our therapy sessions. So now you're just talking in the third person to yourself.
Right.
And the listeners are just along for the ride.
Just along for the listener, man. We appreciate all of you being along for the ride. There's a couple of topics we didn't even get to today that were really relevant for work-life balance type of stuff. But we'll get back to that. We appreciate everybody that comes along for the ride. Truly. So thank you for staying subscribed. We appreciate it. If you share the show with anybody else that you think could get some sort of entertainment or help out of the content that we produce every week, because it is our goal to be transparent, be entertaining to a certain extent. I don't think we can really help it. Mostly because some of our issues are just funny. But also to just kind of bring, you know, reality, you know, bring our reality to you a little bit. So hopefully you're enjoying it. We appreciate you coming along for the ride. As I said, share the show with a friend, if you please. You can reach out to us if you have feedback, whether it's good, bad, or you want us to cover something on the show. feedback@technicallyworking.show. No, don't add a .com to the end, please. Otherwise, we won't get it. And yes, I did check my email. We don't have any new ones. feedback@technicallyworking.show is how you can send us an email. We're both on Mastodon and nowhere else at the moment. He's Payon, Payon at unmute.community. And I am Damashe, Damashe at unmute.community. And a big special thanks to those of you who support us financially. You probably are hearing this early. There probably won't be a bonus show this week for you, but as always, we appreciate it because you can spend your money anywhere and you're choosing to spend a little bit of it over here with us. Still looking for that $150 person. Just hit that button. Just somebody do it, please.
Just one.
I just want to make sure it works.
Yeah, we just want
to make sure it works. Like, does it actually work? Does it really work? Or do you get an error when you do it?
Technically working dot show. Choose the tip jar feature.